Let me share an ongoing dilemma we face in lining up guests for Fresh Air. We want a certain rock star to be on the show. And we're told, oh, he'll be happy to be on the show, but only to talk about his favorite cause, the rainforest. Or the same will happen with a celebrity actor. Yes, they'll be a guest, but what they really want to talk about is their recent fact-finding trip to Nicaragua. More celebrities than ever seem to have adopted causes, and more politicians than ever seem to have adopted celebrities. Warren Beatty was in Gary Hart's camp, Arnold Schwarzenegger in George Bush's. Ronald Brownstein is the author of a new book about the connection between Hollywood celebrities and Washington politics. It's called The Power and the Glitter. Early in the 1988 presidential campaign, Brownstein started writing about how candidates build a financial base. His research led him to Hollywood, where he attended many fundraising parties.
One night in the course of doing this research, I went to a dinner at a home of one of the young political activists on the west side of Los Angeles, and there were all sorts of people there from Hollywood and the political community. And as we were sitting around this table talking about this whole phenomenon, I realized about halfway through that even though I lived in Washington, I was the only person in that room who had not been to Ted Kennedy's house. And I said, huh. Something is going on here. And as I began to research the book, what I realized was that, you know, we tend to write stories every 4 years about how Hollywood has discovered politics. But as I began to do the research on the book, I mean, I found that there was this incredibly rich history there going all the way back to the 1920s.
Do you think that stars are courted by politicians according to what the star symbolizes? For instance, when George Bush was running for president, one of the things he was supposed to be overcoming in his image was, you know, the wimp.
Mm-hmm.
So who does he get in his camp? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, and Chuck Norris as well. They do something else that's very interesting. That you know, in talking to Lee Atwater, I talked to Atwater at length for writing the book, and you know, he talked, I think, quite explicitly about the fear of Bush being portrayed by the Democrats as this elitist, preppy wimp, this blue blood from Connecticut, and they were very conscious of the cultural box that the Democrats were trying to erect around them with the Ann Richards speech at the convention. You may remember, you know, poor George. Born with a silver foot in his mouth and all of this. And one of the ways they wanted to get out of that was by stressing the West Texan Main Street beef jerky side of George Bush. They did that in part by surrounding him with country and Western stars. I mean, just about every other day on the campaign trail, George Bush had some country and Western group, you know, some pedal steel guitarist around him. And it reached its apogee, I think, when they sent him campaigning through Illinois on a bus with Loretta Lynn and Crystal Gayle. And there's this image of this son of a senator from Connecticut sitting in the back of a bus with Loretta Lynn and Crystal Gayle strumming a guitar.
Here's what I've never been able to figure out. How did George Bush get Arnold Schwarzenegger in his camp? And I ask that knowing that Schwarzenegger's married to Maria Shriver. And isn't Shriver the daughter of Sergeant Shriver, who was in the Kennedy administration, Democratic lineage?
We have the Austrian black sheep of the Kennedy clan here, Schwarzenegger. Well, Schwarzenegger is emerging as the preeminent conservative spokesman in Hollywood. But in the 80s, as I talk about in the book, Charlton Heston was forced to be the spokesman on virtually everything. I mean, he was the one defending Reagan. He was the one fighting gun control. He was the one debating Paul Newman on Nightline about the nuclear freeze. I mean, one of the low moments, by the way, in the history of the relationship between Hollywood and politics is having the nuclear freeze debated by Charlton Heston and Paul Newman. But nonetheless, Heston had to be everywhere, largely because there were virtually no other leading conservatives willing to get out there and take a stand on issues for Republicans. What's happening now is that Schwarzenegger, as in some ways the biggest box office draw in the world, at least Time Magazine has told us that, is increasingly willing to get out there himself. I mean, he's spending a lot of time at the White House with Bush. He's going out there and speaking for a variety of conservative causes. And I think that in the next few years, Schwarzenegger will emerge, unlikely as it seems, as a visible figure in Republican circles. He will supplant Heston as the right's principal spokesman in Hollywood.
Can you give us a sense of how politicians court the star that they want to use for their campaign?
Yeah, I think politicians really spend more time courting the Hollywood fundraisers than they do the Hollywood stars themselves. The politicians mostly depend on intermediaries to actually deliver the stars. The most dramatic trend that I think you see in the 70 years of this relationship is the growing sense of importance in Hollywood. I mean, these people increasingly believe that it is entirely appropriate that the people who want to be president should pass through their living rooms first. In the 1988 presidential campaign, Norman Lear and a group of very wealthy liberal Democrats sort of established themselves as a rump group and announced that they expected all of the Democrats to come by for their approval before they would help them. And in fact, dutifully, one by one, each of the Democrats who wanted to be president presented themselves for inspection to this group of wealthy Hollywood liberals. I mean, that suggests that something is a little bit out of whack here in where the relationship has gone, that, Louis Mayer in the 1920s besieged Herbert Hoover, Jack Warner and Daryl Zanuck. I mean, they wanted to be invited to the White House. They wanted to be accepted by FDR. They wanted the social validation that politicians could bestow. Now it's really become the opposite. I mean, the people in Hollywood sort of view themselves as more serious and more worthy than these flighty, money-obsessed politicians, and really give them a pretty bad time.
What's in it for politicians to have Hollywood stars behind them?
Well, there are really two things, money and attention. Money is the most tangible and the most dramatic and the most compelling reason why politicians go to Hollywood. It is clearly an important stop on the national money hunt. The second thing is that stars draw the media, and politicians can use them to attract attention to their own campaigns and their own causes.
What's in it for the stars who affiliate with political causes or with politicians?
I think stars are attracted to it on two levels. On the one hand, politics offers them an opportunity to present themselves as serious people. You know, when I was talking to Robert Redford in the course of writing the book, and he said, you know, Hollywood figures, people in Hollywood often feel like what they do is shallow and insubstantial, and politics offers them a way to say, look, I'm not really this piece of fluff that you see five nights a week on reruns. I am really a serious person. I care deeply about the world, and I have all of these thoughts. The second thing that politics does for stars is it allows them to focus their celebrity on their own aims. I think that's really important. Stars like being famous because it makes them rich, but they don't like being famous because of the 200 paparazzi taking pictures of them every time they get out of their house. The prosaic demands of fame can be very demanding and oppressive at times. Politics allows them to take that glare of celebrity, that fame, and to sort of turn it on its head, use it for their own aims. I think they find that very attractive.
Sometimes really confusing things happen, like when Jessica Lange made the movie about the plight of small farmers. Mm-hmm. She ended up testifying to Congress about small farmers. Right. And you figure, okay, no matter how much she really believes in this cause, I mean, is she the most credible spokesperson because of the 3 months of research she perhaps did for the movie?
Yeah, the image of Jessica Lange and Sissy Spacek and Jane Fonda testifying on farm problems really exemplifies the problem. I mean, the problem is not so much that Hollywood figures get out there and talk about what they don't know about. I mean, that's lamentable, but a lot of people do that in our society. The real problem is that the way our debate has been trivialized, the way that the competition for those 15 seconds on the evening news, the soundbite, has come to define our politics, it's entirely logical for causes and candidates to try to attract the camera with these stars. And that leads you into these kind of absurd situations, like a House committee inviting Jessica Lange to talk about life on the farm.
Are you very cynical about the relationship between celebrities and politicians?
No, I'm not entirely cynical about it. I mean, I think there are many people, many celebrities who get out there and just want to see their name in the paper or are just so intoxicated with their own celebrity, really, just so happy to hear their own voice that they'll talk about anything. I think there are a number of others, though, who are simply in politics, get involved in politics because they're trying to figure out something rational to do with this enormous spotlight that follows them around, this enormous platform with which they've been handed. And strangely enough, I found this to be most poignant in some of the younger celebrities who can say and do some of the dumbest things, but also, I think, in many cases, get into politics because they're trying to send out a message to their very young fans that it is important to be engaged in the society, that just being cool and having an attitude and sort of tuning everything out isn't really the way to go. So, no, I'm not entirely cynical about it. I think there are a lot of people who are involved out of the best of motives, even if it doesn't always turn out in practice to be the best of decisions for them to be involved.
Well, Ronald Brownstein, thanks very much for talking with us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Ronald Brownstein is a national political correspondent for the LA Times. His new book is called The Power and the Glitter. This is Fresh Air.